The Cooper Heart Institute supports WHYY. Their multidisciplinary team of cardiologists introduces the new Watchman device, a minimally invasive treatment option designed to reduce the need for long-term blood thinners in patients with non-valvular atrial fibrillation, thereby reducing the risk of AFib-related stroke. The Cooper Heart Institute is a comprehensive heart care center with offices throughout South Jersey. Details at cooperhealth.org/watchman.
I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight.
The much-anticipated first Republican presidential debate is in the books. Let's hone in on how tri-state candidates performed with Dick Pullman, national political columnist at Newsworks, where he writes the National Interest blog. Dick, welcome back to Newsworks Tonight.
Thank you, Dave.
So did the gate swing open, closed, or stay in place for Chris Christie? Now, the argument is that Trump takes all the oxygen out of the room from the type of candidate, including Christie, who tend to shoot from the lip.
His candidacy has been pinched on both ends, really. I mean, you know, sort of the tell-it-like-it-is bluster niche has gone to Trump, and the sort of I'm a successful governor who can, you know, take my game nationally, I think has been pinched also by people like John Kasich, who got in, the Ohio governor, who I think outperformed Christie last night.
He was playing on his home court.
He was playing on his home court, literally. But he's also got a better record. He's got a better economic record to boast of than Christie does. And he doesn't have the drag of an ongoing scandal and two indictments of former senior aides that Christie has. I thought Christie was lucky last night not to get asked about Bridgegate, probably to his relief. But I think overall, I think he was just kind of treading water.
Dick, what are your presentation and performance impressions of former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum?
You know, I think running for president is just what he does at this point. You know, I don't know. There were stories in the press the last couple of weeks where he's trying to, you know, regroup and retool his operation, and his fundraising is not going well. You know, he's got one guy, an affluent donor, who can sort of keep him going for a while because he can give as much as he wants. He kept them going in 2012. He'll probably do it for a while again. But there's just so many other people competing for, you know, sort of the social conservative niche, you know. Last time he didn't have Mike Huckabee in there competing for that. He didn't have Ted Cruz in there competing for that. And so, you know, and those are people who are, you know, in the so-called first tier. So I don't see where he's going to get any kind of traction.
Carly Fiorina, Lindsey Graham, and others come to mind who are doing a good job attacking Hillary Clinton. And with that, to what extent does that create an opening that Joe Biden might really consider a
reign? Well, that, of course, has been the speculation story of the last week or so. I don't see where his market is. You know, Hillary Clinton is very, very strong with women and with people of color. Bernie Sanders is very strong right now with sort of, you know, the white, upscale progressives, you know, the people who loved Elizabeth Warren and wanted her to get in. And, you know, you take all those out of where else is Joe Biden going to fit in? I also think that it would cause him problems with President Obama, frankly. You know, President Obama, I wrote this the other day, President Obama hasn't given, to my knowledge, one scintilla of a public hint that he thinks Joe Biden should run, you know, where he's been very fulsome in his praise for Hillary Clinton's public service, which is almost kind of like a, you know, an unspoken go Hillary go. And I think they probably have some kind of unspoken, I say this without any forensic evidence, that when Hillary got out of the race finally in 2008, tough race they had, and he appointed her Secretary of State, you know, that there's some kind of ongoing thing there about, you know, that Obama would be encouraging of her trying when the next time there was a chance to run.
Dick, as always, thanks for making sense of the plays and players for us.
I've tried. Thanks, Dave.
Dick Pullman is national political columnist at Newsworks, where he writes the National Interest blog. We'll leave it to pundits to pick the winners and losers, but undisputed winner, Fox News. BAFO ratings, and for that, let's get more from WHYY social media editor Amy Quinn.
Dave, it was a bonanza for Fox News. Lots of compliments from other journalists about the tone of their questions, and it paid off in ratings. This is 24 million viewers, definitely the highest rated presidential debate of all time.
You and I were among the millions. What were your takeaways?
It was unlike any debate I've ever seen in the directness of the questions, especially by Megyn Kelly, obviously. And the fact that the Fox hosts kept the conversation focused on those questions, even as the candidates sort of flailed around and said whatever they wanted, they did come back to the central meat of the questions.
It's kind of a stretch to call it a debate, except for that moment between Chris Christie and Rand Paul. Let's now fold the use of social media into what was happening in real time from 9 to 11.
Sure. Rand Paul had put together a very well-researched social media back-end operation in advance of the debate in terms of who they should track, who they should be looking at, which hashtags they should monitor, which hashtags they should use. Frankly, the discussion on social media was more about what people were seeing on the television. And so for the first time, we really saw somebody take it to Chris Christie, another person of his political caliber, not a teacher in the audience, you know, not a random person on the boardwalk. This was somebody standing toe-to-toe with Chris Christie, and they went at it, and people loved it.
Coming out of the proceedings that night and the next day, one Donald Trump was pointing to Twitter saying, see, this validates that I'm still on top. The questions I was asked were patently unfair.
And if we're talking in raw numbers of mentions on Twitter and topic of conversation, yes, the Donald is far and away the winner. However, if you look at the content of those tweets and what people were saying about him, a lot of it was criticism, critique, people being appalled at his language, people commenting on the applause he was getting, talking about how he talks about women. So it's a spin thing.
So when you say overall this was like no debate you'd ever seen, to what extent is that due to social media, or do we credit exclusively Fox?
I think it is 100% due to the real-time nature of social media. I remember watching Al Gore sigh in his debate with George Bush, and you could feel his campaign just sort of fall apart at that point. Had that happened now, had the feedback on Twitter been, oh my gosh, look at Al Gore, he just took it to George Bush, it might have been great for him. But we had to wait 12 hours for the political pundits to spin it instead of the public spinning it in the moment.
Of all the assembled candidates, some 17, did any appear to you to be particularly adept at utilizing this new form of communication?
Well, it was a little weird to be getting tweets from Rand Paul while he was on television speaking, although that's sort of what they do now. Most politicians will have a team tweeting out supporting data as they're talking. Christie was doing that a little bit as well. What I thought was interesting was the complete silence from Hillary Clinton. She didn't watch the debate. She sent out an email to her supporters as soon as the debate ended that said, no, I didn't watch the debate. I didn't have to. So she was very pointedly ignoring what they were doing, and that was sort of a notable silence.
I wonder if Joe Biden was watching the debate.
I have a feeling Joe was probably watching and having a good time.
And I have a feeling you and I will be watching the next debate as well.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Amy.
Thanks, you.
WHYY social media strategist Amy Quinn on Newsworks Tonight. Gay marriage was one of the issues bandied about at last night's debate. One New Jersey congressman seems to have a conflicted opinion on the matter, and his shifting stance has one commentator calling for him to step down. Bridget Callahan Harrison is a professor of political science and law at Montclair State University. This opinion piece originally appeared on the Politicker NJ website.
Representative Scott Garrett of New Jersey's 5th Congressional District is an embarrassment to his party, and he's an embarrassment to the conservative ideals on which he's based his political career. And now it turns out he is also a hypocrite. While Mr. Garrett has refused to pay the required dues to a party organization because it backs gay candidates, he accepted contributions from groups and individuals who have made equality for gays and lesbians their life's work. Bob Uden, chair of the Bergen County Republican Organization, which is home to over 70% of Garrett's constituents, attempted to rationalize Garrett's comments, telling the Record's Washington correspondent Herb Jackson, "Scott Garrett is just practicing his religion. His belief is that marriage is for a man and a woman, and a man should not lie down with a man." But Mr. Uden is failing to acknowledge the depths of Garrett's hypocrisy. Garrett refused to pay his RNCC dues because they recruited and supported gay candidates. But when advocates for gay rights contributed to his campaigns, nay, bankrolled his campaigns, his religious beliefs in God Almighty conveniently took a backseat to his need for the almighty buck. Did Mr. Garrett ever refuse a contribution from individuals and entities that supported gay rights? From his Federal Election Commission filings, it sure doesn't look like it. Mr. Garrett never turned down a contribution from KPMG, one of the Big Four auditing firms. KPMG's PACs and employees have contributed tens of thousands of dollars to Garrett. KPMG has been at the forefront in supporting gay rights, particularly for its employees. To enable Garrett to keep these funds is an affront to the work for equality KPMG has prided itself on, and it is an affront to the 1,200 LGBT employees of KPMG. Mr. Garrett has the absolute right to be anti-gay, though in 2015, in a state like New Jersey, it's hard to reconcile that belief with being elected to Congress. But if Representative Garrett is going to be anti-gay, and if he is going to rationalize those beliefs as based in his faith, he should have been rejecting the money that comes from groups and individuals who support gay rights. So, Paul Singer and Elliott Management, KPMG, the American Bankers Association, Annaly Capital Management, Bank of America, Citicorp, Capital Group Companies, New York Life, PNC, HSBC, JP Morgan Chase, TIAA CREF, PricewaterhouseCoopers, Brown Brothers Harriman, and others who contributed to Garrett's campaigns should demand refunds of their contributions. In doing so, they will demonstrate that while Garrett has the right to practice his religious beliefs, their corporations do not support his brand of hatred, bigotry, and discrimination, and that it has no place in New Jersey, in the Republican Party, or in Congress.
That's Bridget Callahan Harrison, professor of political science and law at Montclair State University. Turning to this evening's headlines, while Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane waits to be arraigned on charges that she leaked secret grand jury information, some critics want action to force her out of office. Retired state Supreme Court Justice Ronald Castile, who authorized the grand jury probe that led to the charges, said today that Kane should step down. Kane has refused to resign. A Philadelphia judge has reversed another 158 narcotics convictions, even though the officers involved were mostly acquitted of corruption charges. Public defender Bradley Bridge says that around 560 convictions have now been reversed amid the long-running probe of seven narcotics officers. Bridge tells the Philadelphia Inquirer that fewer than half of the squad's convictions have been reviewed. Federal prosecutors accused the veteran officers of stealing large sums of drugs and cash from suspects and then lying in court afterwards. Officer Jeffrey Walker is serving a 3-year prison term after pleading guilty and testifying against his former squad member at trial this year. However, a judge acquitted the other six, and they've gotten their jobs back. Though Officer Perry Betts has been suspended, and he faces dismissal after allegedly testing positive for marijuana. It's 6:19. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Clear skies this evening, partly cloudy overnight, low 66 degrees.
Still ahead.
We're not as into it kind of being like a pop-up per se, because to us it's about a larger story.
We'll hear the story of how the roof of a shuttered Philadelphia high school became a bar and restaurant as Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. Continuing education at PAFA welcomes everyone to join their community of artists of all ages and levels of experience this fall, featuring classes in drawing, painting, sculpture, and printmaking, plus pre-college Saturday classes for high school students, and weekend master classes with noted artists David Wiesner, Elizabeth Osborne, and Renee Folks. Registration now open. More at pafa.edu/CE.
Hi, this is Erica from Montana. I listen to Bullseye because no other program brings such delightful enthusiasm to exploring the creative process. It's a revelation every week.
I'm Jesse Thorne. I'll talk to comedians David Wayne and Michael Showalter about their new series, Wet Hot American Summer, First Day of Camp, on the next Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
Next time on The World, Brazilian musicians who stretch the rules. They're not centrists. They're not conservatives. They're changing the game, which I admire.
American jazz players love Brazilian composer Lecheres Leche. He's the Duke Ellington of Brazilian music, building concert works on Brazil's African rhythms. Global sounds for a big band, next time on The World.
Tonight at 8 on WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Working to counter critics in Congress, President Barack Obama defended the Iran nuclear deal, calling it a choice between diplomacy and some form of war. Let's gauge public reaction with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Frank, the president's speech Wednesday at American University aired live on cable television. Presumably, he was also trying to make his case to the American public.
I'm sure he was. One recent poll that just came out was done by CBS News, and they gave respondents the explicit option when they ask about the plan or don't you know enough about it to have an opinion, and almost half, 46%, chose that option. In that poll, it was a slight negative versus positive for those who did have an opinion based on how CBS News explained it. But then a recent poll done by NBC and Wall Street Journal explained it a different way, and it broke even. And then a Pew poll asked about it and didn't explain it at all, and it was more negative. And then prior to that, an ABC Washington Post poll explained it and actually got a more positive response. All of which tells me that it really is an issue which Americans don't have strongly formed opinions on at this point, and they're willing to be pushed one way or the other as they find out more about it.
Interesting. Frank, we often cite the economy and dysfunction in government as one and two in terms of preoccupations with the American public. To what extent is this Iran deal even in the public awareness?
That's a great question. When we look at our most important problem question, we don't find it showing up at all. In fact, I recently was cataloging the 11 top issues on the minds of the American public at this point, and actually nothing about foreign relations or international relations shows up. It is, as you say, the economy, dysfunctional government, and social problems here in the U.S., racism and immigration, healthcare, education. Those are the things that right now are top of mind for Americans.
Let's circle back to one of the items you just ticked off. This Sunday marks 1 year since 18-year-old black and unarmed Michael Brown was killed by a white Ferguson, Missouri police officer who later was cleared by a county grand jury in the Justice Department. Frank, there have been several high-profile incidents in the interim between white officers and unarmed black suspects. And with that, is it perceived that black and white relations are worse now than in the past?
It is. We just updated a number of our indicators that we have tracked over the years about attitudes about race relations. We're asking Americans to project how would you say relations are between the races in this country today, and they have nosedived. We had a big tumble in the percent of Americans who said black and white relations are good in this country. We also had a drop in the percent of Americans of all races who said they are satisfied with the way that black Americans are treated in this country today. And we've had an increase in the percent of Americans who say the most important problem facing the country today has to do with race or racism.
Though, are the strength of those feelings more pronounced within the black community?
They are, but what's important, we actually have tracked not attitudes about race relations, but we have asked black Americans periodically over the years, within the last 30 days, have you felt discriminated against in a series of situations? And what's interesting there, Dave, and I think this is very important, we have not seen any change in this self-reported feeling of being discriminated against because of race on the part of black Americans. 24% of blacks tell us that they have felt discriminated against while shopping in the last 30 days, 20% in a restaurant or at a venue for entertainment, 18% at work, 18% in dealings with the police. Now, those are pretty substantial numbers overall, but actually these have not changed, particularly the police item. Now, this is important. Black Americans are no more likely, one by one across this country, to tell us that they feel they've been discriminated against in dealings with the police now than they have at any previous point over the last decade and a half that we've measured it.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. A new temporary bar and restaurant have opened atop a former public high school in South Philadelphia. It's called Le Bac Fin. No, it's not the revival of the popular upscale French restaurant Le Bec Fin. This place on the roof of Bach Technical School is Le Bac Fin. WHYY's Peter Crimmins explains.
Bach Technical School is a huge Art Deco building. It's 8 stories tall. It has 340,000 square feet of space. The Philadelphia School District closed it 2 years ago looking for a buyer, and here she is.
We closed on the building just 30 days ago.
This is Lindsay Scannapico. She bought the building for $1.75 million as an urban development experiment. She wants the new tenants to be artists, small manufacturers, so-called makers, who will use this building as it was designed, as a science lab, as a wood shop, as a mechanic shop. There's even an industrial kitchen.
So this was it.
Bach used to have a fully equipped culinary program, which served food under the banner Le Bach Fin. That's a pun on the school's name and the famous French restaurant.
The infrastructure is here. So there's the plumbing, the gas, the electrical, the ventilation. These are all like huge things, huge cost items. And so it just always made sense from the beginning to just kind of say, okay, well, this space should stay a kitchen. Like, it's built for that.
Scannapico is reviving Le Bach Fin, but not here in the third floor kitchen. It's currently in violation of many safety codes. Using a special catering license, she installed a temporary kitchen on the 8th floor to serve people on a rooftop terrace.
So basically the way it works is you get on the elevator and all the other buttons are shut off, so you press floor 8 and go to Le Bach Fin.
Scannapico wants to ask her immediate community, the neighbors, how they would like to use the building's lawns and streetscape. And she also wants to ask the creative community how they would use the building's infrastructure. But first, those communities have to see the building. And that's why Scannapico opened this rooftop terrace as a bar, to invite people in.
So yeah, this is it. This is the 8th floor terrace. Perhaps you can see why we chose this space.
The building is one of the tallest in South Philadelphia. It has amazing views of a sea of row homes and a downtown skyline sprouting in the distance. But the bar will only be open for 6 weeks.
We're not as into it kind of being like a pop-up per se, because to us it's about a larger story. Kind of letting people enjoy it in this temporary moment, but also thinking a lot about the future of what this building will be.
Scannapico wants to open more of this building to the public, piecemeal, with temporary pop-up events, but don't call them pop-ups. She calls it iterative placemaking. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov and Kimberly Haas. Our news director is Eugene Song. At the controls this week, Diana Martinez and Adam Staniszewski. Joyce Lieberman is our radio engineering supervisor. Chris Satullo is WHYY's vice president of news and civic dialogue. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Longwood Gardens supports WHYY. This summer, listeners are invited to explore acres of gorgeous blooms, dazzling water lilies, and shady groves during the day. And when the sun sets, Longwood presents Nightscape, a light and sound experience featuring beautifully animated projections and original music. Open Wednesdays through Saturdays until October 31st. Tickets and information are available online at longwoodgardens.org. Longwood Gardens supports WHYY.